Hello and welcome back to Millennial 2021 for this, the final stream on the 13th night. I believe it is the 13th night. Let me just double check. Yes, it is. And this is with JF Garipi. I might have mispronounced your name there. My apologies if I did. JF, welcome back to Millennial.
I'm doing great and thanks for having me. It's great to be here again.
It's a yearly event. I mean, and people never forget the one, I think it was 2019, when you were really black, you were quite downbeat, and yeah. I was trying to pep you up. But last year it wasn't like that. It was a very different stream. And then I think there was also a year where you were talking about your book, and I was just shattered, and I couldn't follow you. So I think that was 2018.
And then the legendary Kraut stream, where the whole events with Kraut had just been happening. That was the most exciting. Then you were sleepy. Then I was blackpilled, and people were complaining against me.
Yeah, that's right. 2017 was the Kraut one, I remember now. So each one of them has been quite distinctive. But yeah, so how would you, and of course this year, I guess the first thing we can talk about is that you were just banned from Twitter. Now, this happened to me just over 3 years ago, and it was a very horrible thing for me. But you seem to be reacting differently to being banned from Twitter.
Oh yeah, I'm living very good. First, Twitter has banned me for absolutely unjustified reasons. They pulled something because I've been respecting the Twitter rules and going out of my way to respect Twitter rules for many years. And I've been on Twitter since 2011. And my rise on social media was dependent on Twitter. You know, I got known because of Twitter, largely in part. And so to me, Twitter has been a way to live on the internet. And they banned me for platform manipulation or spam. I didn't do any of this. I've always been using as a human Twitter on my computer, manually typing things. I've never been using automated software. And yet they went on this banning wave that is clearly ideologically based, as we knew Twitter was doing. So it's not surprising, but it's quite blatant how they are brazenly just using platform manipulation as an excuse to essentially ban you when you haven't violated their rules. And it shows that respecting the rules really will only save you temporarily. Eventually, the regime gets what it wants. It wants certain voices to be shut down. And it ultimately boils down to what the liberals want. They don't want to hear. They don't want to hear the counterpoint to their mode of thought. We tried to give them a counterpoint back in 2016, 2017, and all they've done since then is to cut their own ears from the right to hear us, because they don't want to hear us, because we're too contrarian, we're showing the evils of their ways, and they want to move on into the future without a contradiction, without questioning of what they're turning society into.
Absolutely. We be shaking them up with our hot takes.
Yeah, and they can't handle what we were doing back in 2016, 2017 around white identity. That's the ultimate explosive line of thought that you introduce to them, and it fucks them up, really. And they couldn't sustain it, and that's why they've been working on excluding us from the public space. It's because we're just showing how bad their philosophy of life goes, and they can't sustain the cognitive dissonance of, on the one hand, being so self-flagellating and so pro-identity when it comes to black people or whoever, and yet when it comes to white people, to be combating this very same mindset that they've been defending for themselves.
Exactly. And I think this was something that we discovered in 2016-17, that if there is a level play on YouTube, and that is that if there is a level playing field, then they simply lose. I mean, this consensus of things like the trans feminism, race not being a real thing, multiculturalism being a good idea, diversity being our strength, all of these things which are taken as givens, axiomatic truths in this age, can only be defended if you censor the opposition, pointing out that the emperor has no clothes, because they are all flimsy lies, and just obviously lies.
Absolutely. And I just watched Matrix 4, and I think it's a synthesis of leftist lies and the leftist turns of thought, that their kind of cognitive dissonance is fully embedded into this movie. And what they've been holding around the trans question, around race, eventually it will explode. And so you ask me how I feel when I'm banned from Twitter. I feel like the leftists are depriving themselves of someone who could have saved them, but won't be able to anymore.
Yeah, at least not on Twitter. I mean, it's how many, because I've not been on there for a year and a half, so I'm you know, out of step. I don't know how many followers did you have?
I had 35,000 followers, and I honestly, now that I'm banned, I realize just how bad the lifestyle was, and I feel like a guy who just started yoga, honestly, and I didn't start yoga. I just stopped Twitter, because on there it became more and more ideologically centered around leftism, and there was just no way you could interact. So I was there yelling in the dark. No one was listening to me. And when they were interacting with me, the leftists on there, they were just sending personal insults, that kind of stuff. So in the end, I was talking to a very restricted amount of people on Twitter. The rest was all hate watching, hate reading. And I feel so much better of being freed from it.
So you're being de-boosted?
I was being de-boosted, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, because this is a thing.
This is a thing
with staying on the mainstream platforms. You get to stay on, but and it's a sort of security that you're still on there. But really, they're throttling you all the time. Sorry, I interrupted.
No, yeah, I mean, it's exactly what I've been predicting. When I saw that we were winning in 2017, I said, the social media is headed toward engineered defeat. The leftists don't want to win with the argument anymore because they realize they couldn't. And what they're going to do is they're going to engineer as if we had lost. They're going to make it look as if we were losing. And that's what they've been doing on Twitter to me. I mean, my big tweets from like the history of my career, it was like 8,000 retweets, 8,000 likes, that kind of stuff. I wasn't doing this anymore. Any of the things I shared about the vaccine or about COVID, they were all getting de-boosted down to 5 likes, 10 likes. And what I realized is that just my gab stating that I was banned from Twitter has gotten much more engagement than anything I've been doing in the last months on Twitter. So there's definitely alternatives out there. I knew that they were there and I was subscribed to them. But I'll be giving more attention to feeding quality content to these alternatives, because I can see what it's like. I don't even remember what it's like to be rewarded for, you know, successful content, good, intelligent content. I've not been rewarded for it for many years now.
That's an interesting point, because ideally there should be a feedback mechanism by which you make something and you get a reward for it, whether it's monetary or whether it's encouragement or whether it's likes or just view numbers and retweets. And I think that's something that we used to really enjoy, and it gets you a bit of a dopamine hit as well, admittedly, but it is a motivating force that you put something out and you get something back in return. And I think that is what we used to have in 2017. You'd put a video out, and if it was a good one, it would get lots of views and nice.
Yeah.
And if you put out some piece of shit, it wouldn't get a good response. Or if you put out nothing, then you would eventually, you would sort of start to, your channel would starve, and it would not have the, you know, the prestige, the prominence that it used to have in the algorithm. But the more you do, the more you put out, the more you produce, the more you get back. In all these different forms. That's how it is supposed to work. That's how social media is supposed to work. Now, you can say that that's unhealthy because it leads to addiction and dopamine and whatever. Sure. But the point is that that is how it's supposed to work. In our case, they're actually sort of weaning us off the drug by this weird trick where they don't give you the high that you want, but they keep you around anyway. They keep selling you the drug, but it's become shit.
Absolutely. And I see you've been successful on Odyssey. People are asking where they can find me. I'm at JFG tonight on Odyssey. All my shows are on Odyssey, although it's not a main platform yet. But I look at your numbers and it reminds me of early YouTube. You know, you get thousands of views. It's not as much as you used to do at the very beginning, but it seems that you're building something. And personally, I'm waiting for the switch to Odyssey. I'm just waiting for the money to be working because I'm still doing much money from the YouTube channel being monetized, but I can't wait for Odyssey to be a viable platform from a money perspective for me because I can't wait to be on Leech. There's so much to say around COVID that I can't fully say on YouTube. It's not viable. Long term, I would like to be able to say everything I want to say.
Yeah, and people have to use coded language. I didn't actually realize this. People have to refer to the thing and having taken the V thing, etc. This is incredible. And it's the same with other issues that, like, I know that the US election had these absurd rules last year that how you were allowed to say it, talk about it and whatever. But then you might abide by those rules and they just decide to get rid of you anyway. As they did with me, actually, in February. I'm pretty sure I'd obeyed all the rules, and yet, you know, that wasn't enough. But this is the thing. It was always like that. People were always saying, they will just get... There's no point obeying the rules. They'll just get rid of you anyway. And my idea was, I think, similar to yours, that I know they're going to get rid of me eventually. I just don't want to make it easy for them. You know, I don't want to put my head in the lion's mouth and then be surprised that it bites it off, you know.
It's amazing the amount of language update I have to do on an every month basis to remain monetized. I mean, this month I've made a radical change in my use of language where I can't even use leftist anymore. I talk of liberals because I noticed Tim Pool uses liberals and the algorithm knows Tim Pool is monetized and he's safe. So I have to copy Tim Pool in using liberals when in fact there's much archer words to describe what is happening to our country right now and I can't use them. But yeah, the reason I do this is it's a violation of the mind. I feel that my brain is getting raped by words that are chosen by my opponent. But the reason I still do it is you have to force them to show their hand, and you can't force them to show their hand by folding all the time. Sometimes you just take a stance, you stand there so that they have to reveal their hand in case they're bluffing. And they've been bluffing on so much. They've been bluffing on liberalism, on the idea of openness, on the idea, oh, we're against discrimination. And we force them down that road to say eventually that I don't hear the leftists anymore say that they're against discrimination. They're now pretty open about the fact that they're for discrimination, but mostly against white people. And it depends on the structure of racism and capitalism around them. So this is forced by taking a stance, by calling out the opponent and by holding them to their own principle. And there are costs to do this. I have to spend years building a YouTube channel that I know eventually will get banned. But it's better that way. It's better that we are in the current state than we were in 2013, where basically the normie could be told, yeah, we're against discrimination as a whole and we're against racism as a whole. And he could believe it. He cannot believe it anymore in 2021. And it's because of what we've done.
Oh, yeah, for sure. The situation has become much more it's unraveled. The realities have become much more obvious. The left have been forced to show what they really believe in. And what they really believe in is power, ultimately. Even if that means censoring their opponents and breaking their own principles and all the rest of it. There were a few things I wanted to pick up on. Odyssey. Hopefully, Millennial will encourage people to transition. Viewers will, hopefully, it will encourage them to no longer go to watch a video on YouTube when they know it's also on Odyssey. Hopefully. Also, with Super Chats and things like that, tomorrow I'll be doing an AMA, and it will be the first time I've done an AMA on Odyssey. I don't know how it will go. Hopefully, it will be a success, in which case I'll start to do that as a regular thing. maybe once a month, I'll do an AME on Odyssey, as well as my regular show on Telegram with the weekly thing. I'm not sure yet. It really just depends how successful it is. Because, you know, in terms of money, I don't make much from the Telegram show. But I like it because it's a new format that's very different from live streaming, from what we're doing now. It's more like a sort of phone call with a friend, which I quite like. So it's unique. I wouldn't want to stop doing that. But it would be nice to start doing live streams as a semi-regular thing. I mean, I'm not a creature of live streams in the way that you are. It's something that I have to do I have to ration myself. But anyway, it would be nice to be doing them semi-regularly. Hopefully the Millennial will encourage people over to Odyssey. Hopefully the AMAs, I'll be doing three of them. Tomorrow, the day after, and then New Year's Day. Hopefully they will encourage people over to Odyssey. Because as you say, we do need this. And it's just for the same reason that, as I've been saying, we need people to get into crypto because we are going to be banned from all of the fiat, the credit card companies and all of this. We're going to lose it all. So if the viewers want this to continue, this community, this movement, then they are going to have to help do their bit. I mean, that's just unavoidable. In the end, it's going to be unavoidable. If that isn't done, then this whole thing will die. It's as simple as that. You'll get people who will be able to do content creation on the side, but they'll have to have a full-time job to survive, in which case you'll get much less content. It's just as simple as that. Is there anything you'd like to say about that?
Oh, yeah, I like the direction that crypto has been taking this year, I think. And Odyssey is quite surprising in the way it's become very professional very quick. It has a bigger rise than BitChute had. BitChute has remained a technologically inferior option for YouTubers who want freedom. Odyssey has totally blasted through the technical issues and got to live streaming extremely quick and got to the combination also between live streaming and financial routes, Rampin, and a crypto associated to it. Makes no doubt to me that the crypto world will be saving the state of freedom for our societies for a little longer still. So we have to totally back this, and I'm totally encouraging. I've been encouraging people at very good prices to get into Bitcoin. That's the future, and I don't know what's going to happen as a result with the normie economy, but Bitcoin will keep rising. It's going to be awesome, and most importantly, it's going to be uncensorable. So yes, we have to use these alternative patents. Continue building the parallel web as I've been doing before, but I've been doing it while keeping a connection to the mainstream. But more and more, this will have to be abandoned.
Yeah, I think it's important to acknowledge that it's a bummer to not be on the mainstream, because there are pluses and minuses. Being away from the mainstream, you can speak openly, candidly. You don't have to censor yourself. But you don't get, being on the mainstream, you get access to the general public. On Odyssey, you know, most of the public, let's face it, will not have heard of Odyssey or BitChute. And that does limit the you will not get the person discovering your stuff by accident and getting red pilled. That, I'm afraid, is, I think it's over. I think that the authorities, the powers that be, have won in that regard. I wish it weren't so. But it is. I mean, as I said earlier, even if you're still on the mainstream platforms, you're getting deboosted. So even there, even in that instance, you're not reaching the general public.
Yeah, and that's a kind of softener of the hit if you do get banned from Twitter or YouTube. It's to realize that you were already banned before it happened. They were already making sure that no one would discover you other than if they manually drive toward your URL. So when you think of it that way, even if you would get a smaller audience on Odyssey, it's worth the switch. I'm just waiting for the switch to not be too much of a hit, but I would be satisfied with a small cut of audience if I would go to Odyssey, because at least I know that on Odyssey I can expand a genuine new audience. because they won't shut me down. They won't make their algorithm in a way that cuts me out the way leftist platforms are doing.
Yes, indeed. Well, hopefully that will be the situation fairly soon. I think by this time next year, I'd be surprised if Odyssey is not very much a viable platform. I mean, this has all happened in 1 year, basically. I don't think I'd heard of Odyssey this time. No, I had. I had heard of it. It had started in about October last year, but it was still, you know, it wasn't a viable thing. But then I think in about February, March, just around the time that I lost YouTube, that was when it suddenly sort of kicked up a gear. And I don't know why that, I can't remember how it all played out now. But either way, it's made tremendous progress very fast. So, yeah, it's a cause for hope, at least in the short and medium term, I think. Now,
yeah, it was mostly around the time that it switched from being library and it was a desktop thing, and eventually it got into its Odyssey, and library is really becoming a secondary thing now.
Yeah, and library, that's a good indication of how things need to be made simple for people, because most people had no idea how to use library. It was just baffling to them. And, you know, it's the same with crypto now. And this is why I think we need to make it as simple as possible when we talk about it, because otherwise people will get drowned in unnecessary detail. They don't actually need to know all the different ways that they could just tell them one way and just make it simple. And I think that's what the Odyssey team have probably decided to do with library, that just make it simple, because people are accustomed to that these days. That's the way it is. And of course, the hobbyist and the expert can still do their own thing with it. But anyway, there we go. So I would like to ask you, since you mentioned it, I'd like to ask you about Matrix 4, Matrix Resurrections, because I've not seen it. I doubt I'll see it anytime, maybe not ever. And yet I'm curious about it. I'm curious about a lot of things, like the Star Trek Discovery. That's like 5 years old at this point. Star Trek Picard, and the female Doctor Who. But I just can't. I can never find the time to, you know, inflict it on myself. So, Matrix Resurrections. Tell me your thoughts.
Well, I've made my show about this while you were speaking to Charlemagne. My show was live and I made a full analysis. So I would recommend everyone go watch my YouTube channel, JFG Tonight. And I make a 1.5 hour full analysis of what goes on in this movie. It is a movie that you should watch because it will help you figure out what was the true structure of Matrix 1, 2, and 3. And the fact that this was ultimately a liberal movie in the head of a SJW, wanting to throw a clear message about transsexual lifestyle and how you should want to destroy the family. You should want to stop having babies to live the life that you want in a kind of fictive universe that the Matrix is. This is the message of 1, 2, 3, and I had analyzed it that way. And some people were with me on my analysis. Some people were saying, Jeff, I'm not sure. But with Matrix 4, it makes no doubt. This movie is about don't make children, jump down a building, kill yourself, and you will discover the truth. This is literally what the movie is about. And if you do have children already, make sure you abandon them so you can throw yourself down the building. This is the movie Matrix 4. Essentially, a new Matrix has been produced, and spoiler alert, I will tell you all. Matrix has been produced. Neo lives in this Matrix. He's a popular game developer, and Matrix 1, 2, and 3 is actually a game that Neo programmed in that new Matrix. Neo is a game programmer, and he's got the success from producing the game, the trilogy. Now, the whole thing is based on meta references, so the whole movie is about, oh, there's going to be a fourth Matrix. There's going to be a follow-up to the trilogy. So they're actually working on Matrix 4, the game, in that movie. Now, Neo feels deep inside that he is in love with Trinity. He must go with Trinity. But Trinity, believe it or not, Medina Rose, I'm not kidding you, Trinity is a mother of three in this Matrix who's married to a guy literally named Chad. She's with the Chad.
I know that the actress in real life has three kids. I don't know if her husband's called Chad. I'll just Google it.
So Trinity is with the Chad, and the whole goal of the movie is steal the woman from the child, the Chad, so that she can stop caring for her children, so that she can come live the leftist revolutionary lifestyle and be a trans as she wants to be. This is literally what this movie is about, how you should aim for a childless life and you won't ever access the truth until you cut your balls. And so eventually Neo, despite the all of the agents trying to keep Trinity and him within the patriarchy and capitalism, Neo succeeds at getting her out of the patriarchy, which is represented by an infinite amount of agents that in this movie they call the Swarm. So it's just a bunch of people who will try to stop you once you try to cut your balls. That's the Swarm. So the Swarm is trying to cut you from making the decision to change your sex, but eventually Trinity succeeds by throwing herself down a building and discovering that, oh, you don't die when you jump down a building. You just go to the sky by flying and you're out of the Matrix. And now Trinity can go on living her childless lifestyle as she's always dreamed, as she was, you know, she dreams of being a motorcyclist and just being free, being like a boomer, a non-reproductive boomer riding a motorcycle. So that's how the story ends, essentially. Neo, Trinity take control of the Matrix and they will paint, literally, Millennial Worlds, I'm not kidding, okay? This happens in the movie. They decide that they will repaint with rainbow LGBT colors the sky of the Matrix.
For fuck's sake.
That's the end of the movie. They will paint the leftist LGBT flag onto the entire sky of the Matrix.
That sounds incredible. But, did you see this at the cinema?
I will not reveal exactly I saw this, but because I'm in Canada, but I had access to HBO deal, and I ended up having it.
Right. I was going to ask if you did see it at the cinema, how the audience reacted. Because it would be interesting to know, you know, how does do they watch that and think, oh wow, that's profound and whatever, or do they think, fucking hell, we're jumping the shark now, sort of thing?
There weren't much people in the room, so I do not know.
Okay, well, it just sounds like nihilism, but it's this weird combination of nihilism with the rainbow stuff is all happy and love and openness. But really, it's
so much more dangerous than nihilism. Nihilism is just a kind of loose, undefined thing, kind of nothingness. This is not nothingness. Lana Wachowski is saying, "Rage Against the Machine," and in fact, the whole movie ends with the song from Rage Against the Machine. I don't remember the title. In fact, They ruined the song. They had a woman sing it instead of the actual singer from Rage Against the Machine. But it's a song from Rage Against the Machine that complains against the FBI and the CIA oppressing the civil rights movements in the 60s and 70s. So what she's saying with this movie is not nihilism. You have to believe in something, but that something is actively combat your reproductive abilities, actively chop your balls, actively fight against your ovaries, and create a world in which there are LGBT flags, and this world will be better than the reproductive option, which is the patriarchy, capitalism, everything that controls you into being a baby producer. Absolutely disgusting and subversive, but at least in Matrix 4, it's open, it's explicit. By the way, Morpheus is not even the same actor anymore. He's been replaced by a fabulous Morpheus who's acting extremely LGBT and who's so much less deep. He's actually mocking the past performances from Morpheus. He's repeating the old sentences from Matrix 1, you know, very serious, do you want to know the truth, Neo? And he's laughing at it himself, and he's saying at the end of the sentences, blah, blah, blah. It's like they're mocking themselves. Lana Wachowski is taking a shit on her own legacy, which was not good, because Matrix 1, 2, and 3 are imperfect movies, at least. We could agree on this. But Matrix 4 is literally a crap movie, a self-referential movie in which at some point I was expecting the actors to look at the camera and start laughing. You know, the way they do in Jay and Bob movies and these kind of cheap things. It's so self-referential, and they make jokes about the trilogy. They even make jokes about the meme around Keanu Reeves, who never ages. You know, I don't know if you've seen on the internet this idea that Keanu Reeves never ages. They actually made a joke directly in the movie about it.
You see, what's interesting here is I was wondering if it would be surprising. I was wondering if it would be something that almost sort of profound, like they're one level ahead. But it sounds like, in fact, not at all. It's exactly what you would expect someone like this to do. It's not taking a surprising turn and affirming something that you thought they didn't believe in before. It's actually just exactly what you'd expect.
And in my analysis of 1, 2, 3, I had a wish, and this wish didn't become a reality. I wanted Lana Wachowski to self-examine and apply her own revolutionary concept, because she's so hateful against society. I would have liked her to turn that kind of contrarianism toward herself. And what I would have done for a Matrix 4 goes as follows. Matrix 4 would have went such that Neo discovers that actually the Matrix is the real world, and the world with robots, that's the game. Of course that's the game. I mean, look at the robots. Look at the unrealisticness of it. That's the game, and in fact, the Matrix must be maintained to maintain the virtual space that the game is, and it must be maintained by baby-making. See, that would have been a leftist realizing that their cognitive structure is unsustainable, realizing that you can't spend your time fighting against reproduction because there will be no one left to hold your views in the future. Now, that would have been a self-examination and a self-realization for Lana Wachowski, but she went totally the other way. This Matrix doubles down on all of the negative signaling from the trilogy. And so we end up with the conclusion that leftists in their contrarianisms are unable to self-examine with it. Their contrarianism only applies to destroying the world as it is, but they're not able to destroy their own bad ideas. And that's the double standard in which we live. And that's why the current world feels like a living hell. It's because these leftists are unable of self-questioning and self-examination.
Yeah, all they can do is double down, even when their ideas are revealed to be unworkable and dysgenic positively just completely destructive. Even then, all they can do is double down. And this is something I think we've all seen with leftists, especially of a certain age. You know, you can understand why some idiot of 20 would believe this stuff. But when it's someone in their 50s, I just Googled and Lana Wachowski is 56. Someone in their 50s or 60s or 70s, it's so much less forgivable. And again, you can understand that side end of life, it's like, well, they've believed this stuff for 50 years. They don't want to admit they've been wrong. But the thing is, it's all the more important that they do admit that they've been wrong for that reason. And after all, they are supposed to have the wisdom of age. That's another thing. What you now find is they don't have that. Their ideas demand that they never become wise, that they never gather wisdom, really.
Yes, and it leads to the sad fact about humans, which is they die crystallized. We haven't evolved to be innovative or to be changing our views after 30 years old. We just grow into whatever it is that the context set us to be when we were 20. And you've seen it with the boomers. I mean, they died exactly like boomers, and they were so self-absorbed that they are responsible for the current state of the COVID crisis. It's like, why can't you die without annoying everyone? Why do I have to stop working so that you get one more week alive on Earth? That's the way boomers died. They died not honorably. they died living the way they lived, which was a self-absorbed hedonistic perception of society where, oh, if I can extend my life a little more, I will ask you all to be wearing those masks. I will ask you all to be vaccinated, even if the vaccine is supposed to be protecting the self. And therefore, the logic would go as follows. Boomers should get the vaccine if they want, but they shouldn't impose it on the rest of the world. But the way boomers carried into their late life the hedonism of the 60s is the exact same way in which the leftists that are currently 40 years old will eventually die, feeling like they're some kind of revolutionaries against the system, when in fact the system has endorsed them, it has gobbled them up and has absorbed all of their energy. And at this point, they are controlling every aspect of every corporation that's worth naming that.
Yeah, indeed. The I don't know what to say about this. The nihilism of the boomers, it's one of those things that you always want them to get over, and that but you find yourself talking to someone in their 60s or 70s, and they just can't. And I think the most frustrating thing is when you think you've got through to them, and then, you know, they go and watch CNN for 10 minutes or something, and then you meet them again and they're back, it's right back to where you were, it's back to square one, and you've like, okay, so that didn't sink in at all. You've got the reassurance from the mainstream media that you've loved all your life that what I said was untrue, so that's good enough for you. You've gone back to the program, literally and figuratively. I mean, the TV is a thing that I think, obviously, you and I grew up with TV, videos, you know, the VHS. But I think at a fairly young age, we transitioned to the internet and digital DVD and whatever. I think for the boomers, it's all they've... The TV is like God to them. It's the equivalent of the priest. It's the thing that they look at it and it tells them, it beams the truth into their heads.
Yes, it's the moral signal. It used to be the priest, as you say. It was the religious signal, and it was holding society in a certain way. What the 40s to today show us is that this moral signal is easily taken over by sets of interest. And these sets of interest now include corporations, at some point included public school, and now still include public schools. And essentially, the control over the human brain, over the young human brain, is being taken over by forces that are absolutely hostile to the traditional order of society. And the way in which these boomers are brainwashed, and I'm even worse than you, I don't even attempt at changing their mind. I do not discuss politics at all with anyone who doesn't want to hear about it, anyone who's not showing me a sign already that they are curious. People are surprised in my personal life because I will never try to convince anyone of anything. I'm very tame when I'm around the turkey at Thanksgiving in the family because I've lost confidence. And as I grow old, I more and more want to just engage with my audience, my crowd. They're the only ones who are truly willing to hear my points. And I grow more and more disappointed in the rest of humanity and more interested at just laying out the truth as it is, as I see it, and not caring at all about being persuasive. Because the brains that we would want to persuade are just impenetrable. They have been taken over by forces that have much more money, much more resources than us. And it boils down to even the elementary school and how our kids right now are being essentially sent into communism. And I saw this when I was young. I was alarmed when I was young. I started seeing all these initiatives in the school to brainwash children into recycling. And I'm not anti-recycling. I think recycling is a good idea. But I was alarmed at the moral pillar that was being built here onto the kids' brain. And we can see today that I was right to be worried, because today it's not recycling. Today it's vaccine. It's don't kill grandma with COVID. It's a climate whole change. System of leftism, climate change. Yes. So the whole leftist priors that are hidden in these scientific like subjects, they're deeply penetrative, and they hurt young brains forever.
Oh, absolutely. On the matter of persuading people, I think that once they're after, and it sounds awful to say this, but once they're over a certain age, like 50, I wouldn't even try. But if they're in their 40s, but even then, like with anyone of any age, I think you're right that you need to, if anything, you need to help them to discover something for themselves. If you try to persuade them, they shut down and they resist. They resent it. So that never works in my experience, because they don't want to admit that they're wrong. I mean, even if they can feel it, even if they know it, they're not going to admit it.
And the great irony of 2021 is that the way you just described their behavior is how they will describe us. They will describe the anti-vax. They will say, oh, you know, they're not open to facts and science. But the reality is that they have given up free engagement and free debate, which we had two or three years ago. We had free engagement and debate in the blood sports era of the internet and a little bit before. We had it when there wasn't an oppressive TOS imposed on all creators. We had a place in which you could have potentially persuaded an anti-vax to become pro-vax. But in the space they created in 2021, it's undoable. Essentially, the only ones who would want to engage on facts are people that are on our side, kind of right-wingy type. And the other side is interested in using all possible fallacies to get what they want.
Well, exactly. I mean, yes, they would say the same about us, that they just can't get through to us and that we're just obsessed with these fringe theories that we've found on the internet. And you can find anything on the internet. But the thing is, well, yeah, you can find anything on the internet, but you can find much less on the mainstream news. And I think that that's significant. There is literally only one point of view on the mainstream news. So I think that is significant. As I've said in previous streams, 20 years ago, you would have actually seen far more of a range of views on the mainstream about something as huge as COVID. There would be disagreement. There would be debates happening between different scientists on the news, on current affairs programs. But in this age, you see nothing. Just like there is no debate about trans, no debate about feminism, no debate about gay marriage. And that really should have been significant. We should have noted, or I should have noted, the significance of that 10 years ago, that there just simply was no debate about gay marriage. It was just decided upon and it was happening and that was that. There was no agonizing about it, no discussion, the discussion of the details of it, whatever, nothing. And that, in retrospect, is an interesting prototype for what we see now, where you are only allowed one opinion on every topic. And that's what I would say to the leftist who thinks that I am inflexible. I would say, well, actually, I am flexible. It's just that you're failing to persuade me. I'm far more open-minded. Indeed, I deliberately kept a very open mind for the first few months, because I didn't want to declare something that, and then later look stupid. So I kept an
open mind. So have you been vaxxed, Millennial?
Oh, I couldn't possibly. I wouldn't want to reveal that. No, of course I haven't.
Oh, okay. I was thinking of demanding your vaccine passport for continuing the stream.
No. I am, what is it? Pure blood.
Pure blood. I'm pure blood also. Absolutely.
Excellent. Team pure blood. Well, no, I haven't been vaccinated. I mean, things would have to get dire before I would do that. And I'm not going to say that I would never do it. I mean, if they've got like a cleaver and they're going to chop off my hand if I don't get vaccinated, I'll do it then. I can't endure that. It's like my worst nightmare. So I would then give in. I know I would.
It's amazing because at my age, I don't change much on views anymore. But one thing that the COVID experience has been doing to me is I realize that I don't want to be vaxxed on anything anymore. I used to be okay with vaccines, but the COVID vaccine coming in made me realize, what are we doing here? We're trading some deaths against other deaths. we're doing something that is deontologically very weird, and especially certain diseases, we're vaccinating kids knowing very well that they are not at risk. It's to protect the adults and to protect them possibly when they become adults. This made me review my entire priors around vaccines, and I've not taken the COVID vaccine, and I think I would hesitate on any vaccine anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you mean. And I think I can't even remember which vaccines I've had. I've just, like, the ones that were normal for my generation to have at school and as toddlers and so on. I don't know which ones, but probably not as many as nowadays. I believe nowadays, like, the average American kid has like 20 vaccines by the time they're 10, so something like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, I know what you mean. It does make you think, well, how was the consensus arrived at for these, for all these other vaccines? It's you do wonder. You just start to wonder. But no, I don't think that we're heading down a rabbit hole or whatever here, or, you know, tinfoil hat territory. I think that we are being completely rational. And it's, you know, the only number that anyone needs to know is 99.4% survival of COVID. And that rubbishes the entire thing, everything. We don't need to be doing the lockdowns. We don't need to be devastating the economy. We don't need to be social distancing. We don't need to be wearing the mask. We don't need to be getting the vaccines and all the rest of it. So all of this, and you know that because only 0.4% of people die from it. And even then, it's the over 80s, vastly. So all of this has to be happening for irrational reasons because the rationale for not doing it is so clear.
Yeah, what we're seeing is a marketing approach applied to health, and it's dirty. And, you know, it would be barely ethical if you were to do this for selling cars, and yet we're doing it for selling numbers, for example, the way we over-test and the way we apply double standards in assessing whether COVID caused a death. And we're talking about deaths with COVID. This is an unbelievable creation of semantics. Deaths with COVID? What about deaths with pants? Deaths with socks on?
Yeah, I read that Italy had revised its death toll, but I Googled it just now to find the numbers because it was about this, you know, COVID, death with COVID, death of COVID. So I've just Googled it, but the first thing that comes up is a fact checker website which says that Italy hasn't changed its COVID death toll. So I'll have to Google that later. But yeah, it's all fact check, all this first page of results, and then the New York Times. So, for fuck's sake. There was one... Oh yeah, so I'll get to some questions here. Someone called Sprocket. Are you aware of someone called Sprocket?
Yeah, he's a guy who I've ended up banning from my show, but I love him very much, and I've ended up banning him because he's been on my show for years, and he was just sending too much questions, too many questions.
Right. Okay. He says, "How am I supposed to interact with you, JF, if you ban me from the chat? Please unban me." And then three smiley faces.
Well, I would be willing if he wasn't sending 15 messages per show. It's like, consume the space of my show. I wouldn't mind if you send me one message per show, maybe two. But 15, that's just too much. And so that's why I ban you. I will unban you one day.
Okay. Earlier on, he cast doubt on what you were saying about transferring to Odyssey. He said, "Don't trust a word JF is saying. He wants a quiet life now. He wrote his book. He won the debates. Now he's making a controlled descent into a calmer existence. He could have easily switched to Odyssey and made based content every day a long time ago, except for one problem. He doesn't want to." So, JF, you're being held to account here. Do you want to make based content or not?
I want to make interesting content. It's never been my goal to make based content. So sometimes my views will turn out to be based. That's your job as an audience to decide if I'm based. But my view has always been, even when I was engaging in racial debates and stuff, It's always been on the perspective of bringing an intelligent and truthful contribution to the public space. Now, what he says at the beginning is actually totally true. I want a calm existence, but that doesn't mean I want an existence that is deprived of any controversy. I want a calm existence in the sense that I want a family life. I don't want to be at war all my life, but I will not let the leftists determine the parameters of that calm existence. I will not let the terrorist terrorize me into not talking about a given subject or another. So I do want to go to Odyssey. I will switch one day. I'm just waiting for it to be viable. And never forget that in comparison to these guys like Richard Spencer, Millennial Woes, I'm a small guy. I'm 10 times smaller than these guys were at their peaks. So for me, transferring to Odyssey could be economically non-viable, even if for them it would be viable. Just be careful with this. Being smaller, I have to care about keeping every piece of audience I can, because I'm barely at the viable state of a YouTube channel. My videos make 2,000 views sometimes, so it's not as big as it used to be, and it's not as big as others.
Yeah, that's true. Although I should congratulate you, because you have Twitter, you had 35,000. I think at my peak I had just under 22,000 when I got that. So you've done well there, especially in the climate. You know,
I was grandfathered on Twitter because I became a Twitterer at the very beginning of Twitter as a scientist in academia, and I accumulated most of my following then. I wasn't even an e-celeb, and I had a big Twitter account.
Ah, I see. In terms of transitioning, it's funny that we're using that term given the Matrix 4 stuff. But in terms of transitioning to Odyssey, I think one way to do it is to do a stream every once a week or once a month or something, where it's Odyssey only, where it's, you know, JF Unchained kind of thing.
Yeah.
Unshackled.
I've done it. I've done an Odyssey show every week. I've skipped perhaps the last 2 or 3 weeks, but I've done it. This allows me to measure how much of my audience is willing to transfer. And for now, the shows remain much smaller than those of YouTube. So for now, it's not viable, but I'm working it progressively.
Oh, good. Well, I wish you luck with that. Okay, JF, what's your opinion on Novavax regarding safety and efficacy? It just got approved in the EU. That's from anonymous Patreon.
I've not seen data, solid data about the Novavax indicating any idea that it's much safer than the other vaccines. The general hope is that because it's a traditional vaccine inserting the antigen without the mRNA technology or without the DNA vector technology, that somehow it's more under control. And it could be true. It could be true that, you know, the mRNA technology, by its very nature, it recruits your cell to produce the antigen, and there may be some problems there. There may be more places for accident and for things going wrong. But I wouldn't necessarily think the Novavax is necessarily going to be safer, because there is a theory out there that the reason the vax is inducing side effects is not because of the mRNA technology. It could be because the spike protein injected is itself a toxic element. I'm not fully certain about this being the case, but it's certainly an hypothesis out there that is realistic and plausible. If that's the case, no matter which technology you use to insert the antigen, the COVID vaccines will always, by nature, be associated with high risk of side effects, precisely because the thing that we want to inject to protect you from is the toxic part of the virus. It could be that way. In that case, Novavax will not be safer than anything we have now.
All right. I know that there are concerns with every one of the vaccines. I mean, I've heard people say stuff about I think it's the Russian Sputnik vaccine, and there was another one, I can't recall now the name of it, but even the non-mRNA ones seem to have side effects and seem to be an unknown quantity. Do you want to say something on that?
No, yeah, it's we don't know much. I don't have much quality data, and even on the vax themselves, the Pfizer, I'm not satisfied about the quantity of data being released. It seems to me that if we've injected a billion people with this, we should have extremely good data. And yet what we have are trials made on 60,000 people restricted to a certain window of time. It seems to me we should have by now much more data than we currently have. And that tells me that they're not looking for answers. And it's the same thing, by the way, with the classic vaccines, the ones for MMR and stuff. I realize we don't have good comparative data on these vaccines. We have a study, because there's so much people being injected with these vaccines at this point, that we don't have a control group. And that's what they tried to pull by speeding up the vaccine process. If you speed up so much and you inject so many people, eventually you end up with no one to compare them to. And that's what I'm afraid they tried to do with, and Trump was a full participant to this process. I find this absolutely disgusting. But today, when we look at studies that look at just unvaccinated people compared to those who got the regular schedule of vaccine, we end up finding the unvaccinated are leading extremely high quality life. They have less otitis, certain disorders of the neural system, they have less. And we end up having scientists tell us, well, that's not evidence because it's not a control group, because it's a correlative study. But the problem is correlative is all we can do, because you're injecting so many people, we cannot even run an experiment anymore. We cannot even do it to meet a scientific standard. So another way to look at this is to say data is being ruined so much by political decision making that we don't know. And that's my current stance on many of these vaccines. And even it makes me change my view on past vaccines that have nothing to do with COVID, but that the control groups have been ruined.
Yeah, indeed. That's something I find very sinister, is that they actually want, the implication that they actually want to get rid of the control group. That seems so just malevolent. And corrupt, that they actually want to get rid to delete the evidence or any possible evidence that their product doesn't work. That's scary. Okay, Charlemagne, my previous guest, says, we know that we are not in a simulation because the Matrix 4 would have broken it by creating a cringe singularity.
I love this perspective.
And then Gus Faye said that both of the Wachowski siblings transitioned one after the other. And you thought your brother was a tag-along. Now, my frequent commenter, Jay Caillou, says, JF, you don't talk about me anymore. Can you please say my name so that I know you still care? So, Jay Caillou.
Hello, Jay Caillou. I still care. I still love you.
Don't we all? Okay. And Sprocket says, JF Unchained, please, somebody make a meme pic out of that. They obviously love the idea of you as a sort of hero just spouting the base truth, regardless of the consequences and who you shock with it. And then Chain Reaction says, JF Sausage Update, please. Any new advice on homesteading stuff?
Well, I've not been making other batches of sausage since the one I've talked about, but it's just because I haven't had the time. But yeah, the drying sausage was a great experience for me. I would redo it once I have extra meat that I want to dry. I think I have lots of work to do to find the good strands of bacteria and molds that will give it the taste I like, but it was a great experience. As far as homesteading, I'm advancing on working on my house, working on my greenhouse. I've been building a part of the roof this year, and when summer comes back, I will be building the rest of the roof. And I'm also working on my second floor, just adding insulation and warming up the home.
Oh, that sounds nice. I remember when I first heard that you were going in for that sort of off-grid living. Is that something that you've is more difficult than you imagined, or more easy, or what?
I would say it's very easy. And no, I've not encountered anything that stuns me or surprises me. There are costs. You have to understand that the more far you live from society, there's going to be heating, electricity costs that are probably a little higher. But there are so much lifestyle changes that you can do to consume less of this all, that to me, it's really worth it. And there's nothing that has shocked me where I've bumped into something that was unsolvable. I mean, in the end, I'm a guy who lived in cities, but I'm a farmer in the heart, and my family has all been farmers. So to me, it's not a problem. And if regular people can do it, why couldn't you do it? As someone intelligent on the internet who consumes intelligent shows, you probably have so much higher IQ than the average. And don't forget that the average can survive on their own and can live off-grid, so you can too.
Yeah, that's a good message and something for a lot of people to bear in mind. Because I think that increasingly it is going to be a necessity for a larger number of people to do this. For their own reasons, you know, I think it's going to be different for each person, but I think each person is going to find being part of the system increasingly intolerable for their own reasons.
Yeah, the vaccine passports may be one of them. Ideological dissent might be one of them, or just the overall, it's been termed cancel culture, but I think it's larger than just people explicitly getting canceled. I think there's a general social avoidance in the left that builds around anyone with kind of a dissent of some kind, or they express just one idea about the vaccine or anything else, and they get kind of canceled in a kind of soft way.
Yes. And there is a sense, as I said earlier, that you are there's a correct opinion on every issue, and you're expected to have it. You're expected to know what it is and to espouse it on every issue. And increasingly, if you don't do that, then you're regarded as suspect.
Unemployable.
Basically, increasingly unemployable. Okay, so the last super chat comes from A Pandemic of the Melanated. And he says, Merry Christmas, MW and JFG. The official Chinese COVID body count sits at 4,636. This is 833,000 fewer deaths than the USA and 143,000 fewer than the UK. Do these numbers compute? Why doesn't the Western media ever discuss these numbers or seem to care at all about what is happening in China? Cheers.
What were the numbers? Can you repeat that for me?
Yeah, 4,500 in China, over 800,000 in America, 140,000 in Britain.
Dying from the vax?
No, COVID.
Dying from COVID. Well, there's been this kind of bizarre picture emerging from China, and it's hard to say, is it because we overtest in Western nations? And we over quantify when we say died with COVID. We're certainly talking about people who had other issues that led them to die. So there's this, are we even counting the same thing problem? There's also the idea, and leftists really, they have this conspiracy theory that China is so authoritarian that they wanted to clean their country from the opinion that COVID messed them up. And so they're lying about their numbers. They're not detecting COVID properly, and they're trying to hide it under the carpet. But what is it? Are they trying to hide COVID under the carpet? Or are we over-labeling COVID deaths that are not genuinely COVID deaths? And I would tend toward the second interpretation. I think that in our Western nations, we have been so obsessed with, and we've been obsessed at the mediatic level with this crisis, but there were also economic interests at play. When Pfizer can make the case that there's millions of people dying in America or in the UK, they have potential buyers for their vaccine now. You know, you could think of a parallel world. Think of a matrix in which 2019 happens and we just don't care about COVID. We don't cover it in the media. We don't talk about it. Really, it would have been a coup. It would have been a flu like another. We would have barely seen it on our radars, on our detection of deaths. It would have looked like a seasonal flu of some kind. And I think that this is what we could have done. To a certain extent, I think we should have done it, but we've taken the other path. And the reason why China has a low death count could be also linked to obesity in America and in the UK. You could think that we had a more easy to victimize population. But I don't think that's the explanation. I think ultimately the explanation is there's a low death count in China because Pfizer doesn't have much vaccines to sell in China.
Right. And what about the possibility that China is simply drastically underreporting the deaths from COVID?
The thing is, to conclude this, you have to conclude that COVID is a great danger. And you've said it yourself, 99 point whatever percent survival rate. This doesn't inspire me to conclude they're hiding something. Like, what are they hiding? 0.01%? 0.05%? There's nothing to hide because COVID kills people at the average age at which they would have been dying anyway. That's it.
Yeah. That's the thing. And this is a point that I've made. I must have made it many times last year on Millennial, that we used to just expect it was normal for people to die in their 80s. And so to say, oh, he died of COVID at the age of 84 is absurd. I mean, yeah, okay, he could have lived to 85 maybe. But
yeah, he died.
Expect, you know, he probably never expected to live past 80.
He died of living above the age, the life expectancy. That's what we should say.
That's very good. Yeah, indeed. Because after a certain point, you should be expect. And that sounds horrible. Maybe I won't have such a stoical attitude if I do live to this age. But after the age of 75, you should probably be expecting something to get you.
I'm 37 and I live every day of my life as if I was going to die that night. So,
all right. Well, one other thing I wanted to ask is completely different from all of this, but it reminds, because this guy Sprocket reminded me of this, because I was once watching one of your streams and there was a commenter who had the most hilarious username that I've ever seen, and it was Tactical Boomerism. Is that person still around? I just loved that username. I thought it was hilarious.
I don't know. Have I banned him at some point because boomerism became something that was threatening to me on my monetization on YouTube? I'm not sure. But I really love this guy. I think this guy has a very funny name. The idea that boomerism, first, is a thing, but second, that you could be so intense in it that it becomes tactical. I really like it in the light of what the leftists do to assault rifles. For example, in the US, we have now assault rifles, tactical weaponry, and we have tactical ideologies like tactical boomerism. But I've not heard of him for at least a year, I think.
Right. Okay. Well, that's a bit of a shame. I hope that he's come up with an even funnier username. But yeah, it's one that stuck with me. I thought it was very witty.
Anyway. And that's one of the sad things with all the TOSs and the bannings. We lose a lot of friends, even you and I to a certain extent. You know, we still have access to each other on Telegram, but half of the people who get banned from Twitter, I don't have contacts with them. I don't know where they are on the internet, and we lose friendships. And the internet used to be all about human friendship, and it's not about this anymore. We lose each other way too easily. And we don't have the platforms and the systems to keep us together.
Well, indeed, one of there were several aspects of being banned from Twitter, losing, like the first time, my real account. there were several aspects of it that were really dreadful. And one of them was suddenly feeling isolated, because it had been the only way that I was connected to many people. So what I did was I tried to persuade people to join Telegram. And over time, most of them did. I think almost virtually everyone is now on Telegram. So that's great. You know, it means that there is this way. Now, obviously, Telegram could get taken over at some point. Maybe they'll start banning people. But at least for now, and I do think they are generally a free speech company. I think they do generally, I mean, clearly, because they're coming up against opposition from different governments, constant pressure to become more censorious, and yet they keep resisting that pressure. So I think that can only mean that they do genuinely care about freedom of speech. So I think for at least for the short term, I think we are safe, and it is a reliable way to stay in touch with people. So yeah, I would recommend that people get onto Telegram, and I'll put my own, for anyone who's not on there, I'll put my own link in there just now, and also yours. So there we go. As I say, it's a very useful thing as a way to deliver content and deliver updates about content, but it's also a very good way to stay in touch with people. So yeah. Here we are. Okay, well, on that nice, pleasant note, and as you say, the internet used to be about staying in touch, and we have these ways of staying in touch. So on that nice note, I'll end this stream before I start getting tired. And then
now, before we end the stream, I just want to warn you, you missed a super chat of $100 from Jan, and it touches my heart because he says in that super chat, JF, I will be sending you a super chat of $100 a week if you switch to Odyssey. That is very interesting. I'm very interested in this.
I didn't see. Thank God you pointed that out. I didn't check the thing. So, okay. Well, thank you, Jan, for that very sizable donation. Very kind. And yeah, there's nothing really for me to say about it except thank you very much. It's much appreciated. Commander Logic says Merry Christmas. Thank you very much. Merry Christmas to you. JF, there you go. I'll donate $100 a week if you switch to Odyssey. So there you go. It is
that would fund my transfer. I'm going to seriously consider it. Perhaps, Jan, would you be negotiating with me on can I do still one or two shows on YouTube a week just to keep my monetization status there just in case? One or two. And then I'll do the rest on Odyssey.
Hope that he replies, and I'm sure that he will be accommodating. I think my notion here is that he just wants you to advance that transition.
Yes,
but yeah, I don't think anyone would reasonably ask you to just abandon a mainstream platform, because you know while you're on there, you should make use of it. It's not something to throw away.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's the key thing is to cultivate the alternative platforms. So, okay, sorry I missed that super chat. I just hadn't looked at it in time. But anyway, it has been dealt with. So thank you very much for that. And JF Gariepi, thank you for appearing on Millennial 2021.
Thanks for having me, and thanks to everyone on the chat. I was looking at your chat as you were listening to us. Bye-bye, everyone, and Merry Christmas.
Indeed, Merry Christmas. I actually forgot to say that, but it is Christmas Day here in Britain and all over Europe now, and soon in North America as well. So Merry Christmas, everyone, and I will see you tomorrow. I will be doing an AMA at 10 p.m. GMT, which is the second slot time. I think that's 5 p.m. EST. So I'll see you then. But in the meantime, spend time with family and talk to friends. And yes, enjoy that Christmas cheer and the warmth of this unique time of the year. Merry Christmas. See you later.
Millennial Woes has created many things, and this is your chance to own one of them. A unique piece of work handcrafted by the Vile Vlogger to commemorate Millennial 2021. 100 hours of highly skilled labor went into producing this animated vector graphic, which can be magnified to any size. In the iconic Millennial Woes font, it glistens and responds to your touch. And at the center of it all, a figure representative of 2021, the White Stag, symbolizing endurance, discovery, and rejuvenation. This one-of-a-kind creation is up for sale as an NFT. Follow the link below, and it can be yours forever. This is your only chance.